Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use in cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Sammy. It is a delight to have you today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You and I have had a couple of conversations, ideas about how we might collaborate together. And I said, well, let's start by getting you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast and let's see what you've got to say to the world about our shared profession. Before we do that, how about though we let you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Jason. It's kind of fun that we can do this from wherever we are and still make it work. As you said, my name is Sammy. I actually am originally from South Dakota. I graduated from the University of South Dakota with, funny enough, a degree in criminal justice. So naturally, I jumped into the world of higher ed philanthropy. It felt like a really good fit for me. No. I was lucky enough to be pretty involved as, you know, a student leader on campus, and it really opened my eyes to, and, you know, I was a scholarship recipient. I wouldn't have been able to get to school without the philanthropy that supported me. And so it really did kind of open up my eyes to the opportunities in this world. And then, you know, some of my volunteer work, which we can possibly get into a little bit later, but really just lent itself to, between the connections I had on campus and sort of my passion for the topic. And frankly, my lack of want to work in law enforcement really sort of drove me this direction. And so I started out at the University of South Dakota and then was doing some engagement work there. And a couple years later, I saw a job out here in Oxford, Ohio, which is where I am now, at Miami University as the Associate Director of Donor Engagement, working in upper-level stewardship. Upper level being like $1 million cumulative lifetime commitments or giving total stewardship. So I kind of work on some engagement plans there. And in my spare time, I'm the marketing and fundraising director at Camp Gilbert, which is a...
And you're in a graduate program there too, am I right?
Yes. I actually just got through my midterms for my master's in business administration. So a little bit more relevant to the world that I am living in than criminal justice.
Totally cool. So Sammy, you had an idea what we could talk about today. Why don't you tee that up and I will keep you going.
Yeah. So I work in, like I said, I work in upper level stewardship, which, funny enough, isn't necessarily what I'd started in this profession doing. Working in alumni engagement and events, it really lent itself to understanding how to create the best experience possible for the attendees of an event. And so when I got to Miami, I was able to take some of that. And then, of course, you know, there's a lot of really good data in the field and research by other donor relations professionals that really show that what my position is supposed to be doing is focusing on how do we create unique experiences, unique engagement experiences. And by experiences, I don't necessarily just mean one-off, you know, this is that one spot. It's a strategic long-term engagement with your upper-level donors, however you define that, to really create longevity in cultivation, to create some really, you know, meaningful stewardship. So it's sort of leaning away from that mass marketing stewardship, away from the, you know, lifetime giving societies and, you know, everyone at this level gets this and, oh, sorry, my window's open. I'm sorry if you can hear all of that. And really more toward a focused strategic long-term engagement of our high level donors. So we have about 150 of those at Miami and we treat each one differently. I came in and we started actually, this is a brand new position at Miami. So, and actually it really is a brand new direction in the field. It hasn't been from the research that we've been able to conduct. It really hasn't been a widely spread initiative until recent years. When we just started to realize that mass marketing, while it certainly works in annual giving and in a more sales heavy, auto sales heavy piece, it really doesn't lend itself well to long-term engagement with our high-level donors who really do expect a personalized experience and relationship with the university or nonprofit, whatever you're working in. So I specialize in those unique experiences and those unique engagements.
So what does a person like yourself who's trying to, you know, so what does that look like? What is that looking like on a day-to-day basis? And because, I mean, stewardship pre-COVID would have looked like one thing. What does it look like today? Or does it look any different?
Yeah, it looks very different. So actually today and yesterday, I spent the majority of my time creating a photo book for a donor who has donated some wonderful pieces of artwork to campus. And we actually just installed the last piece. And so what I spent a majority of my time doing, it's just like a scrapbook feel, right? Like I make it in like Snapfish. Now, we do have a marketing team that we can certainly utilize for some of these bigger ones. But when you're trying to make, you know, a meaningful, it feels like a personal touch, you don't necessarily want this super professional, clearly a marketing group put this together piece. And so we wanted it to feel kind of like a scrapbook. And so we actually pulled pieces of like this donor's yearbook photos and any organizations he was involved in. If he was in those photos, we put that in. And so it's like a little scrapbook for him. But then also, you know, you put at the end of something like that, you know, here's the impact that you've made just in your time after graduating. So you get to see and relive all of those wonderful memories that, you know, made you fall in love with the institution. And then, you know, hold on, we're going to actually show you all of the good you've done since. And so, you know, this donor has supported some political forums and also some wonderful artwork on campus. And so we were able to do some, you know, really older photos of when some of the former artwork, I think as long as 25 years ago, was installed. And so we've got, you know, photos of the crane like coming in and dropping in this big giant cast iron piece of artwork, and then, you know, put that with last week's installation of this beautiful piece of ceramic. And it's huge and just wonderful. And so we were able to share that with him, and actually we'll send it off for approvals today. But, you know, that's what today looks like. Last week looked like, you know, how do we send a donor who has, you know, decided to name the art museum directorship, and how do we celebrate with them without being able to bring them to campus or go to them? And so, you know, we're lucky to have a professor who is, you know, well-versed in wine and wine pairings and wine history. And so we reached out to him and said, hey, we want to have a virtual toast with our donors. We want to be able to get on the Zoom and send them a wonderful bottle of champagne, have a copy of that champagne with us. We want to hear from you about, you know, a little bit about the champagne and how awesome it is, right? And then we want to do a virtual toast to them and their impact in this one gift. So my day to day looks very different. And it's really funny that you mentioned the MBA, because I actually find myself applying a lot of what I do as far as, you know, I'm in an innovation class right now, right? And so hearing sort of the process of innovation, it's really fun to be able to say like, well, those are pieces that we do every day. And I just get to apply some more of that, you know, a little bit more strategically. But it's really every day looking at it from a case by case basis. I spend a lot of time getting to know these donors through the data that we have, through interviews with our development officers, any campus partners that know the donors. I mean, it's really important that I know as much as I can about why they love Miami so much. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about making them hear that, you know, hey, we really appreciate your love and care for this institution and the future of its students and community. And we want to make sure that you feel that appreciation in the way that is most meaningful to you. And so it's been really fun. It's a unique experience because, like I said, every day is completely different.
Okay. So in the midst of COVID, so here we are in 2020, which I think is going to be a mind-boggling experiment in how the world operates in the future, right? Yes. Because so much seems to have changed, but a lot of things don't seem to have changed quite enough. And while we're experiencing COVID, we're also experiencing this reality of the social unrest and this political battle that's playing out in Washington and around our country. And I had a conversation, Sammy, the other day about one of the sacred practices that we have in fundraising, which is that idea of segmentation. And that's sort of on the front end, right? So we segment out our donors and we decide who's going to get what according to what sort of expectation and so forth. And it's interesting to sort of be talking to you now on sort of the stewardship end, because that's on the back end. So we segment on the front and we steward on the back. But the same question sort of comes to mind, and that is, are we going to have to begin to sort of revisit, just like I was asking this other guest about segmentation, are we going to, in sort of this era of sort of questioning all of our values and judgments and discernments and those sorts of things, are we going to also have to begin to question like how we prioritize time and resources for stewardship as well?
Absolutely.
Because I mean, like for segmentation, what the conversation came down to is that in many cases, we're almost explicitly deliberate to pursue those donors who perhaps can give us the, you know, the most significant gifts in the most efficient time period in the most agreeable sort of ways. Right. Mm-hmm. And in some ways we sort of steward those relationships the same way. And so those who are the most sort of cooperative with the way that we do our work, we steward them the best. And perhaps those who are not as cooperative, we don't steward them as well. Do you think all that's going to have to go out of the window in this sort of this era we're in right now?
Well, you know, I think, and this isn't a novel idea, Jason, but I think that we are starting to realize that assuming our data is so accurately going to show the people who are going to, you know, efficiently get us the most money in the least amount of time, you know, sort of insert that whole statement you put here.
Yes.
Right. I think we're going to have to throw that out the window regardless of the time we're in, right? I just think that line of thinking has always clouded the way we've been
able to. Oh, you don't think it was accurate anyway?
No, I don't.
And that's interesting. Okay, good. Okay, I like where you're going. Aggressive.
But I do think that we have clouded ourselves in what we think to be really great data, right? We think we've got this formula down, and people just aren't, we don't fit into formulas well, right? And I think
human beings don't.
No. And I think that, you know, in this era of individualized stewardship that we're heading into, I do think that we're going to start to find the more we get to, I mean, I found out one of our donors is like a Abraham Lincoln impersonator. And we found out it was like his 40th or 50th anniversary of being a Lincoln impersonator. Huge part of his life, super passionate about it. And the fact that we had figured out that one little piece, you know, he's still giving us three or six figures a year and frequently references the one time we brought him back to campus to put his Lincoln garb on and take photos around campus so we could celebrate that with him. I mean, I think it's things like that that we're going to be able to look at and say the data never would have showed us that if we were to do that, his engagement would go from meh, I'll talk to you, you know, once a year and we'll see how it goes, to now we're hearing from him, you know, every other month and he's checking in on us during these times. And, you know, he's sending us those six-figure gifts. I just think that sometimes you have to flip the script on things. That doesn't mean you should always be, you know, the rebel talent or the change agent. But I do think that we're on sort of this cusp of, if you don't think about the idea that you could be putting things into a formula wrong, you are going to be behind to a point where it's going to be very, very hard to catch up, especially now. And that's where I think your point of, you know, in this era sort of comes in, because if we, I mean, we can't afford to be behind anymore. You know, there's not as much free rope to pull yourself back in if you get so far behind.
Sammy, we've talked about stewardship in a number of ways. We've talked about segmentation, but I don't think on this podcast, and we're upwards of 200 episodes now, I don't think we've ever talked about sort of this underlying, is sort of what we're centering on here now at this point, this idea that there's an assumption underlying everything, that there's a formula to this. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that, and I like to think, and I think if I'm reading between the lines of what you're saying, I like to think that fundraising is slowly, because a lot of my guests have heard me say, and I'm sure you have, that sort of we're working our way through our messy adolescence. And so we're sort of maturing beyond PR and marketing and some of the other consumer-oriented sort of ways of thinking. And I'm thinking that fundraising perhaps could become less formulaic, in that it would actually be, you know, like the relationship that the relationship I have with my spouse, the relationship I have with my children follows no formula. Yes. There are certainly patterns. There's certainly patterns that sort of emerge that sort of guide decisions that I make, but there's not any sort of magic formulas to this. Do you think that's where perhaps fundraising's going, and that perhaps that's what segmentation on the front end and stewardship on the back end might look like?
Yeah, I think I should say I hope that's where it's going, right? I think your examples are really sound. There are obviously patterns. Data can support, you know, suggestions. And I am by no means knocking data and segmentation and analysis. Yeah. You know, I think those are very important pieces of what we do, obviously. But yeah, I do think that if we can step back from the formulas, because it's so easy, right? It is so easy to be like, we know that in 18 months, we can get $1 million out of this donor for X because we need X and they like X. Don't get me wrong. That's such a hard thing to step away from, right? But if we think about it and we pull back and we say, okay, but why do we think this donor would support X? Why do we think $1 million is it? What have they given, right? So how do we make sure that we have done right by them already? And I know these things don't sound novel, but it's so easy to forget to do them all because we're like, well, we can get $1 million in 18 months and that's all we need. But who knows, if we were to get to know that story just a little bit better and understand that human just a little bit better, they could have, you know, an affinity for Abraham Lincoln. And we have, you know, some program on campus that really sort of like scratches that itch for him, and he could be more engaged, and he could, you know, we could bring him to campus to do these impersonations and to, you know, fulfill some of these dreams that they have for the institution. They're not just giving money. I mean, there are donors who just give money because they know it's what's good to do, right? And that's important to know. But there are so many donors out there that give because they want their story told, or they want to be able to help tell someone else's story. And that's not a formula. You don't formula stories out. So you really just have to, you have to take the time. And you know, Jason, you keep referring to stewardship on the back end, and I just don't know that I see it that way. I think if stewardship's involved in the cultivation process, and I'm not saying I'm here to help cultivate or I need to go on cultivating your gift, but if I understand the thinking all the way through and I help development officers ask these questions, you know, and get that story for that donor into their minds, into Miami's mind, we can help tell and create so much of a better story. And that impact can just expand so much farther than $1 million for X because they like X in 18 months. It can just be bigger.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Right. I think when I say the idea of sort of stewardship on the back end, I mean, that is the formula. I mean, you know, if we were going to sketch out a very linear process by which fundraising works, that we could then sort of plug in our most ideal donors, you know, fundraise as stewardship would come in on generally, it would sort of be seen in an ABC process. And it would be, you know, at the end of the line, I guess you could say. But I think you're right, Sammy. I think when we're being less formulaic, and when we, like when I think about my relationship with my spouse, you're right. Stewardship happens everywhere. That's what you're doing. You're stewarding that relationship all the time before and after the quote unquote transactions in life. You're always sort of taking care of the relationship. Is that sort of what you're getting at?
Yes, yes. And now that I hear you re-explain it, I also understand that that's what you were asking me. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing, as I'm listening to you, Sammy, as I'm listening to you talk, and we're sort of centered on this idea that sort of fundraising is perhaps moving away from its sort of formulaic sort of ways of thinking. I also tend to think that in some ways you represent sort of this. So I'm constantly in this battle between sort of two generations of fundraising professionals, those who've been around a little bit longer than perhaps I have, and those who haven't been around as long as perhaps I have. And so what I'm hearing in the way that you're describing your experiences is this energy that sort of comes alive in the way you're describing in this real interaction with people, right? You're actually describing real meaningful interaction with individual people. And that tends to be that thing that when I'm talking to people who have been around for, say, less than the two decades that I have, that tends to come out. But when I'm talking to people who've been around longer than I have, they're just selling the science. It's like the formulas, and it's the guaranteed outcomes, and it's the efficiency, predictability, and control. Have you sort of encountered that between sort of the different generations that are sort of leading the way right now in our field?
Yeah, I think you explained it pretty eloquently. Also, I do think there's a battle between not messing up, which would be sort of, you know, that group of people who you mentioned have just been around a while, and this is the formula, and we know the formula works, and we know the formula hits our goals. And then I think this new energy is more, I mean, it's what that generation has taught us, right? Which is to fail forward. And so there is quite a bit of a difference there. And it's not necessarily just at my institution, even at my, you know, my alma mater when I worked there, and some of my peers who are sort of in my generation, as you called it, for this fundraising field. It's really hard because, you know, we're taught to have so much of this energy, and we do, gosh, we do. We have so much energy and excitement about what we're doing, because many of us have benefited from it, right? Like when I was in undergrad, I got a scholarship to go abroad to Ireland, and not even understanding how sort of cool, because now as a fundraising professional, I wish my students would take sort of, you know, this prerogative. Sure. But I mean, I was so thankful for the gift that their last name was Gallagher. And so I went and got from Ireland, like a Gallagher coaster, and I sent it to them.
Of course you did. Right.
I was so excited. Right. I was so grateful for the experience. And I think that that is something, and I think about it now and I'm like, well, I wouldn't just want the kid to just like send it off without me knowing about it, because our office had no idea it happened. But, you know, there's something to be said for that fire and that, like, that idea that, yeah, I'm probably going to mess up. You know, we're probably not going to get this story perfectly right the first time. But like, I think the energy allows us to feel like that's okay. And I think, you know, that group that's just more experienced feels like, no, we know what gets it done, and let's just stick to that. And that's not necessarily completely wrong. It's just, it's limiting, you know, and you just don't know the missed opportunities you have. Plus, I think I've never heard it explained that way, the way you explained it, where there's a difference in the energy. But I do think that's a really important piece, right? Because if we don't have this energy and passion for what we're doing, which I'm grateful you can feel mine because I love this job and I love.
Okay, but it's like. Okay, but it's like what you just said with the Gallaghers, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's storytelling is what it is. And when stories are absent of humanity, when you don't actually have real people in the stories, the efficiency, predictability, and control, that's a concept I'm working on with this next book project. And the efficiency, predictability, and control that's sort of embedded in that formula that we're sort of critiquing, that so many of our, we might call our predecessors that have sort of championed this profession ahead of us, ahead of you and I, for example. When I speak to them oftentimes, and I encounter this less on the podcast, but more so when we're talking to prospective clients at the firm, when we're speaking to prospective clients, if I'm talking to someone whose fundraising operations are not sort of measuring up, they cannot tell stories of donors by name. I'll say, tell me about the five relationships that you, I do this all the time. And this is where stewardship comes in, because you can tell they're not stewarding relationships because they cannot name five individual relationships, call them by name, not trying to pry into who these people are, not trying to pry into the size of the gifts. All that is sort of secondary to you just being able to describe interactions with human beings who loved Abe Lincoln, for example, right? Mm-hmm. They can't do that. And my concern for where we sort of fundraising finds itself right here now in the midst of all this sort of up and down roller coaster experience of 2020 is that we have a large cohort of fundraising professionals out there who cannot talk about fundraisers by name and sort of allow those meaningful that Abraham Lincoln factor, we'll call it, for you to inform even the formulas that we're called to make. Mm-hmm. You're going to let that Abe Lincoln factor in that story for you. You're going to totally let that factor in to any formula that your boss asks you to write.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's what we lose in sort of this work, is that we haven't interacted with donors well enough to sort of let those more richer experiences sort of inform our work.
So do you think there is, Jason, you've talked to more people in this profession and in various places in this profession more than I have. Do you think there is a future in which there is less of a difference between, you know, stewardship and donor relations professionals and development officers? I mean, is there a future in which in some regards they are one and the same?
I think the divide, and I talked about this in my first book, I think the divide's always going to come down to what Edward Hall was, an anthropologist that was writing in the 1950s and 60s about what are called extensions. And extensions are those things that human beings sort of like my cell phone, my automobile, my laptop, all of these things that we put between us and other human beings to sort of do to create more efficiency, predictability, and control. Right. So we, you know, I can walk with my own two feet, but I rely on, you know, my automobile to do that for me. I can communicate with you in person, but I rely on a laptop or a cell phone to sort of help me do that. And I think, and so to getting to your question, I think fundraising is going to increasingly find itself always sort of in this battle between relying on extensions, sort of those methods, those tools, those techniques, those formulas, versus just understanding that when fundraising gets done at its best, just like any other relationship, it's done literally across the lunch table where there is no extension between us. And so I like to think that for so long, fundraising has been defined by these extensions. You know, we define ourselves, we sort of pigeonhole ourselves into particular methods, good at using particular tools, be it event planners or grant writers or major gift offs, all these techniques, all these formulas for raising money. When in fact, what is truly what gets a person like you to come alive, what gets you to come alive is the fact that you went over to Ireland and picked up a gadget that said Gallagher on it, because that's a real human. There's a relationship there that perhaps some other, I mean, obviously some other fundraising professional was factored into that. But that's true human, that's human fundraising right there.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Am I answering your question? That's kind of what, That's what I think our flaws are, is that we've let the formulas, the algorithms. I don't think Facebook and Google are going to save fundraising.
Yeah, no. Good point.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, I don't know, topic, theory.
So we're before I let you go, having picked up on your energy and your enthusiasm, we've sort of gone all over the place, Sammy. But where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, you know,
after the graduate program, we got another year in the graduate program or what?
After this semester, I only have 2 classes. They have to be spread out on 2 semesters, but hallelujah, I will be an MBA in August of 2020.
Yeah, so after that's all done and you've figured out fundraising and perhaps fundraising is your path, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah, I think, so I have some personal relationships that sort of make that a little fuzzy. My significant other is currently a head football coach in the college, or not head football coach. Oh my gosh. He is a football coach in college. Yeah, and so that makes it a little difficult to try and figure out. But as far as where I'd like to be in the profession, honestly, I'd like to just continue to help develop this piece. I've toyed with the idea of becoming a fundraiser. And I do it for the nonprofit I work with, well, that I volunteer for. But I just don't see my passion in, again, applying that formula and asking for the right amount of money. I see my ability to tell stories, to market, you know, an experience to someone, sort of the precipice of what I can do. And so I would like to, you know, stay in the donor relations world. And frankly, I'd like to convince the field that what you need is not more fundraisers. What you need is more donor relations professionals. And, you know, I'll tell you why.
So are you grasping for more of a what I feel like you're grasping for there is just a more holistic understanding of the way fundraising works. And if you got that sort of full, sort of all-inclusive responsibility, if I'm reading between the lines, I don't think you want to differentiate between fundraising and, say, stewardship or something. That's what I feel like I'm hearing. And if somebody offered you that opportunity, you'd be all on board.
Oh, 100%. I think it's just, it would be really cool to be able to actually test this out in practice, right? To show that if you're thinking of stewardship and donor relations the whole way through and not just, I need to raise X amount of money this year. I mean, how much more good can be done?
Oh, it's out there, Sammy. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm pushing what I'm pushing. That's why I'm having these conversations with people like yourself. It's out there. I think people are picking up on that. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a holistic understanding of how this all works. And again, it gets back to everything we've talked about. When you're not compartmentalizing each part of the step and you don't see segmentation and segmentation, solicitation, and stewardship sort of as these isolated parts. And instead, you sort of see it all as this one way that we care for relationships, people that care about us. It becomes much more meaningful work. And people like yourself end up staying in their jobs longer and you raise a whole hell of a lot more money.
Yes. Yes. Heck yeah. Retweet. I'm in.
Sammy, I've kept you for a half hour. We've been all over the place, but somebody may have heard our conversation. They want to reach out to you. How would you suggest that they reach out to you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. And it's Sammy, S-A-M-I, Zoss, Z-O-S-S.
All right, Sammy, it has been a pleasure. You're always welcome back. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.